Welcome to the Central Assembly Podcast. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
I appreciate that, Carter. I will keep our stories between you and I, so that's good for all of us. Again, we are Steve and Janet, and we are just humbled and privileged to have the opportunity to share a little bit of our story tonight with you. As Carter mentioned, we came back to Springfield in 2008, both to work at Evangel University. When we met, my wife was a resident director at Southeastern University in Florida, where she had graduated from, and we kind of felt that call to working with college students in higher education, and so we moved back to Springfield to live in a small apartment in the middle of a dorm of 300 college students. That explains a lot about who we are and what brought us back to Springfield. But we do see higher education as a ministry and an opportunity we have to serve. And as Carter mentioned, I still get the opportunity to serve on Evangel's campus in a variety of roles. And you'll hear a little bit more about our family as we go along tonight.
Yeah, we're so thankful to get a chance to come, and I just wanted to take a look and kind of see faces, and because the lights are bright and it makes you feel a little alone up here, but we know that we're not, and it's really special to me to get to share tonight, because I see friends that have journeyed, like Steve said, Carter for over two decades now, and his wife Jill, and then so many that I could call by name, even ones that went to college with my parents, and that's pretty special to me. So we are honored to get to be here tonight. We want to be able to talk to you a little bit about what our journey looked like, specifically our journey through some deep grief times, and we want to put that out there from the start, that we know we don't have a market on what grief looks like. We know every story is different. Everybody's perspective and how you walk through grief has your own individual touch on it. The one thing that I think is pretty special about the body of Christ is that common denominator for us is the presence of Jesus. And that's the one thing that I hope that you will hear the most throughout our story, is that it certainly wasn't even just a fingerprint. It was all of him that was right there with us. And so we just want to share that with you and kind of walk you through what that looked like for us. In fact, one of the things that makes Central so special to us is right over in the chapel is actually where we had the funeral for our firstborn son. And we wanted to kind of journey a little bit of what that experience was like for us, as well as how wonderful Central even was to us during that time, but kind of walk you through a little bit of that tonight.
Yeah, so like any typical married couple who has a desire to grow their family, we came to that point in our marriage where we were looking to grow our family. And so we began this process. And like, you know, a lot of people, you know, we're not exclusive to this, that journey was not easy for us. That was one that took a lot of time. What turned into months, turned into year, what turned into 2 years plus, and that journey for us to conceive and to carry a child through a pregnancy became very, very difficult. So difficult that our local doctor here, after running a number of tests and those things, had actually referred us to a reproduction specialist in Kansas City, and so we made that trip up there to have an appointment. We had an appointment on an early morning, and so we had gone up to Kansas City the night before, and while we were in Kansas City the night before,
we found out that we were pregnant. So just random in that aspect, more random than we'll even share with you, but found out that night that we were pregnant. It was confirmed the next day through blood test, and for the next 26 weeks, a very uneventful first two trimesters of what seemed to be the final into the wait, the journey we felt was finally going the way we prayed for it to go. And we were so excited. We were journeying with our college students. They'd done a gender reveal party. They'd done all of these things. They'd actually just thrown us our very first baby shower. Mm-hmm. And on a Tuesday morning, on the way to a meeting with Gina Rentschler. How many of you know Gina? She's pretty wonderful. She's a great boss, too. And that's not just a plug in case you're listening, Gina, to the podcast. wonderful lady to work for. But we were getting ready to go to a meeting, and I just had noticed that the baby wasn't moving as much. And all you mamas that have carried a baby in your womb, you know that normally they're pretty active, or you get used to the patterns of what that's like. And we just noticed that we knew it was a little boy at that point, that that he wasn't moving that much. And so we went to the meeting, kind of kept an awareness of it. And then I told Steve probably about 4 o'clock that day, I'm like, something is just different. Something is just off. And I will put a plug here for husbands right here. But one of the things that I've told Steve, there are certain times I can pinpoint different gifts that he's given me throughout our marriage, specific things. In that moment, he didn't question what this mama heart was feeling. And he said, okay, so let's go. Let's just go get it checked out. And if it's for peace of mind, if there's something, we'll get it checked out. And so the next thing we knew.
Yeah, so we're at Cox Health Urgent Care. And because of where we were in our pregnancy, they immediately sent us over to labor and delivery. And they throw on the heart monitor, and immediately heart rate's like 150, 160 on this little guy. And we're like, good, all right. Just kind of set our hearts at peace a little bit. But they said they wanted to monitor and just kind of keep an eye. And mind you, we'd had no issues, no complications, no falls, nothing like that. But the heart rate just remained steady, right around that 150, 160 rate. And they came back and said, we'd really like to see more fluctuation in that heart rate. Just like you and I, when we get active and move around, our heart rate increases. And when we sit and rest, our heart rate decreases. They were looking for those same signs for our little boy. And it wasn't doing it. And this was causing them concern. And so they did ultrasounds and they did tests and to really condense an intense period of time. Early in the morning, that morning, a test result came back that indicated that our son was losing blood. And at 26 weeks, the only opportunity that they would have to save our son would be an emergency C-section. And I remember the doctor coming in and saying, so your baby's coming tonight. And I was like, well, what kind of time do we have? Do I have it? And she said, no, right now. And within 2 minutes, Janet is out the door. Scrubs are thrown on the bed for me, and they say, change, Dad, we'll be right back to get you. And in that moment, I had about 4 minutes, and I think I called 3 family members and 2 buddies from college. And the phone call went something like, baby's coming tonight, please pray for us, gotta go, no answers, see ya. Next phone call. And obviously, we were rushed into emergency. And at 4:08 on April the 4th, 2012, our son, Liam Stephen Goss, was born here in town.
Yeah, and I love that he said 4:08 because there were times throughout the whole process I didn't remember any of the details. And so 4:08 is significant to us because it helps to mark the beginning. And in that delivery room, this tiny little boy, I'm laid out on a table. The doctors are trying to work on him, and they take about probably, I don't know, what seems like seemed longer than it was, but they could not get his heart rate to come up. He had lost so much blood, and they were continually working. And they came over to us and actually said, if we can't get that heart rate up, then guys, we're going to bring him over to say your goodbyes. And I'd not even seen the baby yet. And so you can just imagine the thoughts that are running through our head. It had been already such a thoughts actually running through your heart because your head doesn't even know how to wrap around it. It had already been such an up and down journey throughout the night. And so we just kind of stopped. And all of a sudden, I hear Steve's voice, which you can already kind of tell. He's a little louder than I am. And that's okay because it helps when he's a coach and he's out there on that court. But a loud voice in the delivery room of probably 14 or 15 people. And he is calling out to Jesus to somehow work on our behalf, to show favor, to touch this little boy's body, to elevate that heart rate, and to give us more than what it looked like we were going to get. And I remember the doctor coming over and saying, Dad, keep doing what you're doing, because we just got his heart rate up from about 60 to 160, and we're going to go ahead and take him to the NICU. And so from that moment on, again, the pendulum moved back, and we were in that okay, so we can move forward moment. So Liam went to the NICU, and then I went to recovery not long after then. And throughout a turn of events over the next 30 minutes to an hour, the doctors came back into us and just simply told us that Liam had fought so hard in the womb and that his body had lost such a significant amount of blood and his organs had fought as hard as they could, but that if we wanted any time with him, that we needed to go to the NICU then. And so, barely out of recovery from a C-section, rolled down the hallway, and over the next 4.5 hours, in disbelief as well as that anticipated joy of meeting your little boy, having no idea how to process what was going on, the most numb that I think I've ever felt, because you can't imagine being in that spot, so you don't know how to feel in that moment. And over those next hours that really felt like minutes, Steve actually held Liam first, and then I got to hold him, and around 10:40.
Yep, 10:40.
Thank you.
10:40 that morning. We got to do what nobody should have to do, and that's hold a child as they passed. And passed from our arms into the arms of Christ. And again, it's not a journey that you would wish on your worst enemy, or not an experience. But that is what we found ourselves in that day, literally holding our son the first time, knowing it would also be the last time. And from that, we want to show a video that we actually got to show at his memorial service and funeral that we did here, that will give you just a snapshot of what that looked like for us. I will confess, I am the son of a bull rider and a barrel racer, and so it is to country music, all right? It will be just fine. But we'd like to give you just a snapshot of what that looked like with our video here for our son, Liam.
It gives you a tiny window, of what that moment, those moments were like for us. And in that moment, as we held him, there were 4 of us in the room. There was Steve, myself, Liam, and then there was the very recognizable presence of Jesus. It is the only thing that carried us through those moments, and it is the only thing, he is the only thing that carried us through those moments, and he's the only thing that carried us through the days and the weeks and the months and the years, even to this point. Because obviously our grief, you don't see the same as we sit here, but you learn how to manage. You learn how to walk the next steps. But you don't do any of that in the beginning, and you don't do any of that, I don't know, without Jesus. And so I think that's what we wanted to be able to share with you, was to give you a glimpse into what those moments were like for us, but just a few things that we kind of learned in the process, in the journey of the aftermath. Okay. So
I'm actually a master's degree in psychology. I teach as an adjunct professor at Evangel in the behavioral sciences department. And I can tell you the stages of grief. I mean, I can tell you the way it's supposed to look. But this experience was a lot different than what a textbook would ever tell you. Having grown up in Central Florida, one of the great ways we've kind of described this is, you know, I grew up in Central Florida. I love the ocean. I love the beach. I love being in the water. It is one of my favorite things to do. But you grow up learning about this thing called the undertow, that there are many times in certain weather conditions and things that the wave going out from the beach back out is so strong that it will pull you out. And you learn, as somebody who grows up around the beach, that if you fight that, if you try to swim against that, if you try to come straight back in, then you are going to be unsuccessful. You will wear yourself out, and the wave will win. And so you learn, again, growing up in Florida, that the best way to deal with the undertow is you have to ride it out. You literally have to let it carry you where it carries you until a point it is safe to exit that. And that's what we felt about this journey of grief, is that we had to ride it out. We had to know that it was something that we were going to walk through, and that we had to go where it was going to lead us. And we talk many times in that about the types and the different griefs that were going on, even within our house at the time. There was a particular way that I would grieve, which was, as a male, it was one that I'm a doer. I wanted to fix something. I wanted to go work. I wanted to go accomplish something that was very comfortable for me dealing with grief. But at the same time, Janet dealt with it in a different way.
Yeah, totally quiet, wanted space away. The introvert in me didn't need anybody that needed me, including at that time, it was hard to be even needed by Steve. And yet, I think one of the things that we had to learn for us, for our journey, was there were three individuals or three people grieving. There was Steve's grief, my grief, and then there was the together grief. And it took us quite a few months to realize that we had to do that grief together. It wasn't just acknowledging, hey, I know you're grieving. I know I am, but it was how are we doing this together with Liam, for Liam as his parents? And statistically, you hear so many things of after parents lose a child, that there are so many marriages that fall apart because of that. And the hospital room, I remember Steve talking to me about that this would be one of those things that we would have to pull together on for him, for what the Lord even was writing in our story, even at that moment. And so that helped us along the way, was being able to acknowledge we were going to do it differently, but that we also had to do it together, and giving each other that chance to grieve the way that they grieve and it not look the same. About 4 years before Liam passed away, my mom had actually passed away, and Steve was such a rock and such a comfort to me during that time, because the majority of the grief was mine, but for us, it was different to have to do this way together. And so that was one of the things that we learned.
Yeah, one of the things we learned is that we had to be gracious with one another. Because she wasn't going to grieve the exact same way that I was, and vice versa. And so we learned that we had to be gracious with one another through grief. The next thing that kind of sticks out as we look at this process that we walk through is we had to be patient. Grief is not something that can get rushed. There's not a date that says, you should be better now. There's not a timeline that says it's time to move on. I was reminded by this because as part of our memorial service, we were living in the middle of 300 college students at Evangel. We did a memorial service on campus in the chapel for our students because they had experienced this journey the same way we had. And so we wanted to do that. And President Spence was a part of that chapel. And for those of you that know Dr. Spence, he is a giant in the faith to me, and I admire him so much as a leader and as a person. And for those of you that have heard President Spence ever speak, he doesn't miss many words, ever. And he doesn't use notes, ever. But he is such a great communicator. Well, during our memorial service, as he was sharing in our experience with us, I saw President Spence get caught up and catch words probably for the first and only time in my life. And for those that don't know the experience, President Spence and his wife have actually lost two children. And I realized if here he was 40-something years later, still feeling the emotion of that moment, there was no timeline to our grief. And so we had to learn to be patient with grief, be patient with each other, be patient with those around us, be patient in that process.
And really thankful for the people that were patient with us, because we'd never navigated that before either. So milestones that people were walking that we couldn't be a part of because of the place we were in, people that were patient with us and loving with us that helped even during a very quiet season for our hearts. Yeah. So,
And the final thing we just kind of wanted to share tonight in our journey of grief and what this looked like is we learned how to be authentic with God, to be real with God. And that looked different at different moments. There were moments for me where that became loud moments of yelling with God, of wrestling with God. We hear scriptures of Jacob wrestling with God, and that was the moments of your wrestling with this God of why in the world is this what we're experiencing? Why is this part of our story? And we were having a conversation with Janet's aunt and uncle about this, and this is fairly recent after our loss, and one of us made the statement, we didn't ask for this. And her uncle stopped us. And again, a godly man, a minister for decades who I admire. He said, you did ask for this. I'm sorry. He says, you asked God that you wanted to be parents. What that looked like, you never knew. But God has made you a parent. Now, what are you going to do with that? And so, again, in that being authentic with God, we always want to ask God for the good things. But with us and our desire to be parents came the biggest heartache of being a parent. And so we had to come to that with God knowing you've entrusted us with this for some reason. You've entrusted us with this story. And those moments, for me, the coach, a little more extrovert, became loud. At some points, as I became authentic with God.
But in those moments, Steve referenced that of saying, why this story? Why you did ask for this? What is that? Even maybe for these moments. So when Anthony reached out and said, hey, would you want to share your story? There's really not a part of us that gets to say no, because it's not our story. It's not one that we've written. It's one that he's written. We do get to steward Liam's story. That's the parenting that we get to do for him. There are two other little ones that are down in the nursery right now that we'll talk about in just a second as we wrap up. But we get to parent them, and we are changed forever by Liam and how we even parent them. But we get to parent and steward his story, and we get to share that in a way that says, wherever it is that you're at, on if you've experienced grief, if you've experienced loss, those places where you're wondering, what is the reason for this, God, whether it's screaming it, which we've both had our moments of that, whether it's not being able to find a place where he brings a peace to your heart, it's in knowing it's in those moments that the presence of God is right there, that he's writing that story in those moments, and that's part of stewarding right where you're at, right where we are, even in this moment. So,
yeah, as he wrote that story, Caritas, we've come to kind of talk about that as sustaining grace. That season for us was sustaining. Like we had to be held by his grace. It wasn't anything that we could do in our strength. And so God's grace is sustaining from that. When we kind of shift there, and Janet mentioned, we've got two littles. We now have a four-year-old and a two-year-old that have come after that story. We are very big in meaning and symbolism and those kind of things. And so our son, who's downstairs in the nursery, his name is Lucas. And Lucas means light. And there's our little guy up there, our whole family. But Lucas means light. And we truly feel like he became a light to us at the end of what was a very dark, hard, difficult time in our journey. And so Lucas became our light.
And we haven't shared this a lot, I don't think, from a public platform, though many of you walked through that with us. We actually were not able to conceive again for several years, even after Liam was born. And we just felt that not next step, not alternative, but that the Lord was saying, I have something different for you. And adoption is actually woven through the tapestry of my family quite frequently. So it was something that just felt like, okay, then this is what you have. And in December of 2014, almost about 2.5 years after Liam was born, Lucas was born and was ours from, well, really the beginning of time, because the Lord already had that mapped out. And he already knew. And so the gift, the healing balm that Liam brought to us, or that Lucas brought to us, not that gift made up for the story or the loss, God's faithfulness was made so apparent in the walking through the journey. And Lucas got to be a byproduct of just faithfulness, of his faithfulness to us, not even ours to him. And then Olivia, the little curly-headed sassy ball right there, she came along in 2016. We found out that we were expecting and had no idea. That was not even on our radar. We'd actually begun the paperwork to start the adoption process again and felt like that was a full go-ahead. But I can remember praying with the Lord one time, walking in our neighborhood and saying, okay, Lord, I just want a healthy body for the rest of my life. You know how we cover all those things as mama. Healthy body the rest of my life to watch this little boy grow up. There's nothing else. My mama heart is content. I am grateful and content for this little guy. I need nothing else in that department. And I felt the Lord drop the words into my heart that said, little girl. So I just began to pray for all those friends that I knew that were wanting another baby or were expecting or whatever it was, and went about our way. And who knew that several months later we would find out that we were expecting a little girl. And honestly, we tell Lucas all the time, it's because God knew you needed a sister, because our hearts were full. So now they just get to overflow a bit. And so
kind of that journey, we talk about God sustaining grace through this period of Liam, and then Lucas comes along, and that's really kind of a redeeming grace. Kind of felt like he redeemed that season for us. And Olivia becomes the overflowing grace, just God's abundance and his overflowing to our life. And through that journey, we've recognized God's faithfulness. And like Janet alluded to, faithfulness of God was not shown in the gifts of Lucas and Olivia. Those were byproducts. His faithfulness was shown in his presence of us, or being with us through that journey. We want to tie faithfulness to things or to people, and faithfulness is God's presence in our life, no matter what we may walk through. So much so that even on our son's headstone, on Liam's headstone, it says, he is always faithful. And that has become an Ebenezer for us, a place where there is a stone that we can look back and see this is what God has done, and God is faithful. And so again, we do not claim to be the experts on grief. We simply have experienced it, just like many of you probably have, to great depths as well. And so again, so thankful for the opportunity, and we are Steve and Janet, and this is our story.